Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world.
Hello, and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security, joined by one of our favorite guests, Roger Grimes, CISO advisor at KnowBe4. Roger, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me. And I got to tell you, the Center for Internet Security is one of my favorite organizations. I think that you're on the top 1% for getting how cybersecurity really works. So always excited anytime I can work with y'all.
Oh, fantastic. We appreciate that. Thank you, Roger. And KnowBe4 as well. Because really our topic here today, and it's a term Tony came up with, and it's scammer jousting, how KnowBe4 reacts in the space of tactics, techniques, and procedures from the scammers. So, Roger, when we think about this jousting element, the scammer jousting, and what KnowBe4 does, really the applied simulated capabilities from phishing, the awareness training, bringing all of this together to really help enable organizations, and again, KnowBe4 being one of the top 1% of the 1% training organizations as well, is how does that relate and how do you bring these features and make it, in some cases, very entertaining? Because, you know, we've been through trainings that have been, here we go again. And I think you've raised that a few notches through KnowBe4. But any thoughts there of this jousting effort where we take these new procedures and then we roll them into training and bringing that awareness to the community at large?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, to start out, human risk management, social engineering, and other ways that you trick in users is involved in about 70% to 90% of successful hacking, right? It's the number one way. Number two is patching. That's involved in about a third of all attacks. Although I think attacks against unpatched software and firmware is probably increasing these days. But the human element's always like you have a great firewall and great antivirus, and if the user clicks on something, they've bypassed every defense you've thrown in their way. And I think early on when we did human risk management, it was this training. We should give them training, and training once a year, right? It'd be like giving someone driver's ed training once a year or something like that. But very quickly, people caught on that we should probably do simulated phishing testing of some sort. I always have the saying, like, don't let the hacker be the only one that's testing, your end users and whether they would respond to a real phishing attack or something like that. So, simulated phishing, the jousting is a really common method of trying to help train people. Let me say it is training and it's good training. We have a lot of years, we have 15 years of data across 70,000 customers to show that the customers that do more frequent simulated phishing have better training rates and decreased cybersecurity. They actually have less attacks than companies that don't do it or do it less. And, I think a lot of years ago, 20 years ago, when security awareness training and simulated phishing training was coming in, in a bigger way, that I think a lot of companies were really scared of it. And if you sent out a simulated phishing test, it could get you fired, right? Especially, I always say, another saying I have is no one gets promoted tricking the CEO. if you trick your CEO, he never thinks, I want to promote that person. At best, he supports what you're doing. But there was a long time ago questions about whether you should do simulated phishing. Today, most of that is gone because the people that do the security awareness training, the simulated phishing and stuff, understand the value. Like I think it was Black Hat and RSA where there was some speaker talking about, oh, the security awareness training, simulated phishing, it doesn't work. And people literally just getting up and walking out. And I was like, yeah, because their own experience of being an administrator and trying to do it shows that it does work. And our experience, an untrained staff that doesn't have the training in simulated phishing when they come to us, our new customers have not been trained and not been simulated fish. About a third of them, sometimes 40% of them, will click on what you and I would think, Sean, is a terrible looking social engineering email. Like, there's no way someone's clicking on that. It's full of typos and it misspells our company name and the logo's not right. And we don't even have a department called the HR department. Nope. 30 to 40% will click on it. And then after they get training and simulated phishing and stuff like that, that rate drops to below 5% in most cases. Sometimes can be very low. So there's proven value in doing it. Although I'm still shocked, there's still many companies and large companies that don't do it. You know, like some of the airline industries, the unions involved don't allow the simulated phishing against anybody in the union. There's a lot of companies exempt executives. I've seen that in really important places where the executives, even in Congress, where they don't get simulated phished, and you're like, you know, you're skipping the best training against the highest risk critical positions and roles that you have. So I am still amazed when someone doesn't get that sort of training, but there are pockets of it today.
Yeah. Well, again, very surprising. Because, I mean, if we look at the vector of phishing and really one of the capabilities, again, as a user of KnowBefore's platform is going through these exercises, one to simulate, trying to build that, as you mentioned, the human risk resiliency in order to understand and tune the approach to how we interact with email. And, we read the Verizon data breach report, the vector of phishing, so prevalent. Everybody has an email address. And again, especially when we're talking about higher level officials in organizations, without that tuning, without the training, it kind of feels like the jousting becomes, it's not really a fair competition. It's not jousting. You're just, literally just fishing in a barrel and I'm just going to catch all of these. We'll put it another way. We'll say whales in a barrel, because literally if these whales, and these are the larger targets in the organization, are not understanding and tuning their approach to how to interact with email. That's so surprising that that's still prevalent today. And again, due to the results, the data supporting the fact that moving through a program such as this, and as you mentioned, it actually has results. It builds capability, it builds a resiliency, manages, mitigates that human risk. And it boggles my mind.
I think we all know that there are people along a spectrum in our organization, some people that seem to click on everything, and then you have other people that seem not to click on anything, right? And then a lot of people in the middle, but you tend to have people kind of in the bell curves on both ends. Well, the people that are more likely to fall for a phishing attack, you want to be able to give additional training to. You know, how are you, if you're only doing training, how are you going to identify the people that need more intensive training, right?
Yep.
So literally, if you're not testing your users and capturing the results of that and figuring out, do I need to change my training in some way, you're not being as efficient and effectively in decreasing cybersecurity risk in your organization. Because we know for sure that one type of training doesn't work for everyone.
Exactly. And the other piece is if we're not doing the jousting necessarily, so I'm going to use my air quotes there, Roger, is the attackers will be, and they love to go through that. This is an opportunity that they see. And again, when we move through these programs and we identify, as you mentioned, we'll go through, we'll use the metrics, because really it is a data-based approach to managing that risk over time. So we, over time, so it's not just an annual training. We bring in this concept continuously in the organization, and we have to. And I think, Roger, it's reflective of a security organization doing the right security things in terms of managing the risk over time. And what's especially important and what is provided through the platform is the tactics and techniques have changed. I think the level of phishing fundamentally changed with the large language model, with the ability to now craft in both vernacular, in terms, in context, in even a persona of certain individuals that have changed fundamentally those triggers. And I wanted to get your thoughts there, Roger, because I think that also is why it's so important to continue down this path. Would you agree or disagree?
No, absolutely, right? And there's different forms, right? There's, you know, phishing was largely an email thing, and then it moved into SMS smishing, as we call it. Now there's this huge crease in voice calling or voicemail phishing, which is called vishing. And then there's another one called callback phishing, which that's one where you kind of get this, hey, you need to pay this invoice for a TV you didn't order. And we're going to charge your credit card for $1,300. And if you didn't call this number, well, it's just a picture in an email. And it's very difficult. Any of the anti-phishing filters have a hard time because it's a picture. And there doesn't seem to be any indicator that it's a phishing email. And all there is a phone number. And so you would have to have your anti-phishing filter, like call that number, listen to the fake call staff and stuff, and try to figure out if it's real or fake. Yep. So you do have to expose people to the increasing technology, certainly AI. And let me say that we know that AI can create really good messaging, right? Without grammar errors, typos. Most of the people that are creating these phishing messages are not from the same country as the victim, because they're relying upon the protection of the international borders, giving them legal protection. And it certainly does give them that, but they're also not normally a native speaker of that foreign country. So that's why you have grammar errors and typos. And then AI changed all of that, allowing them to create not only perfect messages and more realistic messages and less typos and grammar errors, but also allowed them to put it out in a lot more languages. You know, they may have been limited to just English before, but now I can send it out in Japanese and, you know, Korean and different derivations of Spanish. But, you know, it's the part that really scared me about AI early on, before the even AI deepfakes, which have totally changed everything, was the ability that if you had a potential victim respond to the attacker, to the scammer, they could use AI to respond in a very realistic way. So it wasn't the initial, I was like, okay, we all knew that they're going to get realistic messages. It was the ability for someone, what do you mean I need to pay this invoice, you know, business email compromise scam, and the AI being used to respond in a very realistic way very quickly, which made the likelihood of success of that attacker being greater. And even being able to use industry vernacular, like every industry, like if you're in the hotel or the hospital industry and someone calls you and says, what's your census? Well, you know that if you're in the hotel industry, they mean how many heads in beds, you know, did I have last night? And what do I plan to have tomorrow? And someone is sending you an email that has that industry vernacular, it's going to appear more legitimate than one that doesn't have, you're like, oh, this is an insider, someone that knows me or industry. Well, an attacker can't memorize all the industry jargon that's in, you know, 1500 different industries, but an AI can. So it allows them to craft these more realistic messages and responses. And then, of course, there's AI deepfakes where you can just create, you know, all you need is a picture of someone and about 6 to 30 seconds of audio, and you could create an audio video of them saying and doing anything. That certainly was game changing for the job. Talk about jousting. The swords just, the lances just got a lot longer.
Exactly. Or they just changed completely into a new weapon. A bow and arrow.
they got bullets or something.
Exactly. Well, Roger, we'll be right back. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk about gamification. We're going to look at the real world consequences. We're going to look at organization engagement in such programs. With that, we'll be right back. Up until recently, threat activity fell into one of three domains: cyber, physical, or information operations.
This made it simpler for defenders to learn about a threat actor, track its evolution, and put protective measures in place.
Unfortunately, it's no longer that simple. Threats are now multidimensional, blending these three domains together.
You can't analyze threats in silos any longer, and a pair of 3D glasses won't help you expose them. You need to see the entire threat environment. You need ThreatWalk.
Unlike separate raw data feeds, ThreatWire provides warning and analysis of multidimensional threats all in one place. That means time and money back to make better risk decisions.
ThreatWire isn't just a subscription. It's an exclusive intelligence sharing network that uses its expertise to help you defend against today's multidimensional threats.
Actionable intelligence in a complex world. ThreatWire's
got your back.
Learn more by visiting cisecurity.org/threatwalk.
Okay, Roger, we're back. And, you know, one of the things I love about KnowBefore, the platform and the continuous evolution of the underlying program and its capabilities are elements of gamification, data in terms of making decision making with respect to what have I seen, what was clicked, what are the techniques that seem to be working that we need to train on, and using that to curate really a program for an organization. I think that makes it contextually aware. And I want to get your thoughts on, is that what you've seen from other organizations, and is that something you promote from a KnowBefore perspective?
Yeah, I must say that gamification, and let me say, I have a twin brother that loves gaming and stuff like that. I'm the opposite of that. I'm not a person who likes to play online games or, you know, this sort of stuff. I don't do games. But I have noticed looking at her data that any of the phishing campaigns that include some sort of gamification has a higher uptake rate, not only in people actually taking the training, doing the activity, but in the when we test and quiz them, they learn more. So like gamification has real, you know, you're entertaining people a little bit. I guess it's like you watch a documentary. You don't want to just watch this staid documentary. You want to be entertained a little bit. Well, I think the same thing in cybersecurity. If you can add some gamification to it in some way, people like it. In the simulated phishing, you know, where people feel like they're being tested, one of the neat side effects is we have a lot of people that will get a real phish. And then they'll say, oh, you thought you're going to get me one of these games. You know, you're going to try to trick me with a simulated fish. I got you. And they reported it as a simulated fish. You're like, no, that was a real fish. Right. So you're gamifying them into being looking out for the signs and symptoms of a phishing attack. And again, one of the other, not to, you know, tout our own horn, but one of my favorite features called fish rip and flip. If you get a real world fish, you can actually do fish rip, and it actually rips out all the stuff that could be dangerous to your end user, and fish flip it and then send it out to your user base and see how many people would have fallen for this attack had it actually reached everyone. And I think that's a, you know, it's a really great measurement that you can take to management and say, hey, had we not done this test, you know, this, you know, 13 out of, you know, 1,000 people would have responded with their credentials or would have clicked on this link and could have been compromised in our environment. So it's a game where, you know, even getting, again, the statistics out of it can give you, I think, useful, measurable data that you can then show to management. You know, a lot of times it's really hard if you're running antivirus or firewall or something. It's like block, 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 block. Here we can say this would have been the real impact. Had we not caught this, had we not flipped it, 13 people would have been compromised. That's real security risk decreasing.
Exactly. Now, again, the rip and flip is a fantastic element because, one, you're using really the same premise that was received in order to re-engineer and bring it to, like you say, to a wider audience. Maybe that went to a C-level, and well, let's see how that permeates throughout the organization. If this were, you know, across many different people, I think that's very important. I think the other piece as well is I also like to use those, again, contextually aware for certain groups. Because in some cases they come in, you know, it's this is developer training or it's a new development AI module and we want you to use this and whatever it happens to be. All right, let me get that to the people that would, one, be interested and not just, well, this has nothing to do with me, you know, spam, get rid of it. And I find that has such potency that we can actually then utilize necessarily the content of the fish, not just we're creating phishing and, you know, we'll put out that, you know, a fish, a Black Friday fish, let's say, and let's see who clicks on that. Okay, you know, we'll send it to everybody in the organization. It has some utility, at least they're identifying and they're considering an email just before clicking. But I think that contextually aware, one, not only helps, and I call it calibration. Calibrating what I'm seeing in terms of an email and actually trying to digest it before making a decision. And I think that has a lot of potency. And again, this would be reflective of some of the behavioral type of approach. It's not behavioral engineering in any sense of the form, but at least approaching email this way versus it's in my inbox, I've got to reply. You know, it wouldn't be here in my inbox because all of the security controls are perfect and I only receive quality and good email, so I have to respond. And you know, we've been working through those thoughts as well, Roger. But I wanted to get your perspective as we look at contextually aware. We look at an ability to use email as this forcing function for behavioral and decision-making approaches, and then also allowing it to work to your favor. And again, as a CISO, this is very, very important because I want to mitigate, one, the human risk, the technology risk, and all of these different components to the lowest possible level. But I find this one, it gives me the data kind of immediately, you know, through the campaign. And I can actually do something with that data. And I don't know if you've seen that, you know, from your CISO advisory approach and really from the organization.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, let me say, we are trying behavior modification, behavior engineering, because another saying, this comes from Perry Carpenter, one of my coworkers, but he said, you know, people may be aware and still not care, right? So you can talk to you all day long about social engineering, but if it doesn't result in a behavior change, a decrease in cybersecurity risk, have you really done anything? And so we do want to have behavior engineering in a positive way. We are trying to change not only the person, but really the culture. You know, like I've consulted for hundreds and hundreds of companies. I've been doing cybersecurity for 38 years. I don't know if I've been to thousands of companies, but it feels like that. But every time I walk into a place, I can very quickly, within a minute or two, kind of see, do they take cybersecurity seriously? Like, are all the screens locked that are, you know, that aren't, don't have people at them? Does someone always lock the screen before they walk away? Or is it always open? Do they seem to be using strong passwords or multi-factor authentication and that sort of stuff? If you do cybersecurity right, cybersecurity education right, you're not only modifying the behavior of a person so that they're decreasing cybersecurity risk, but you create a culture in the organization so that when like a new person is hired, if they come in and even if they haven't read the policy yet, but they see everybody around them locking their screens before they go away, they start to pick that up. A lot of the things in our culture are things people observe and don't really realize we're kind of teaching moments. And that's what, if you're doing it right, you're creating a culture where people are a little bit more aware and doing, you know, safer security behaviors, even without thinking about it. And you're changing the culture into the company. And really, again, let me say, it really does, if you do it right, significantly decrease cybersecurity risk. We've done a report. The average company, between 40 and 60% of companies get breached each year, 40 to 60%. I mean, there's 10 studies to show you that. Our customers, while they've been our customer, the rate of being compromised is 2.73%.
Wow. That's impressive.
While they're our customer. Wow. You know, and I don't completely say, you know, we can't say it's causation.
Right.
But we can say that organizations that are doing a security awareness human risk management program are trying to, they must be trying to change their culture in all sorts of ways. And we're a piece of it. Right. So, and it really does, you know, reduce risk. And people go, oh, you always have something that clicks on, blah, blah, blah. Not always. And if you look at the stats, your people that do have security awareness training programs, and you'll hear people, oh, they fell for this simulated fish, blah, blah. Did it result in a real world compromise? That's all we really care about. That's the only metric that matters. And as far as we can tell by the available data, it does significantly reduce real risk to do these things.
Wow. Impressive, right? I mean, we take the data and we abstract certain influences, I would say. So like you say, the cause and causation element of it, it does seem to align. And the other element that I do see as well is the support coming from KnowBe4 in terms of engagement with the product and utility in that return on investment. It's not just something, okay, we've sold you, you're a customer, thank you very much, we're moving on to the next. It's a curated program that allows those numbers, I would say, Roger, to say, well, we're partnering with you now. We're you know, we're in this together. We're with you. We need that number even lower than the 2%. We want to get it as low as possible. And that's a big difference. And I think that differentiator also leads us to the point of, one, I think what I have seen is the feedback KnowBe4 gets from both the engagement, how the system works, and both the content is constantly curated through a program of, okay, oh, you need this? Okay, let's talk next quarter. And there it is. It's like this continuous element of improvement. It's amazing.
You're exactly right. I mean, just like with, you know, these days, the age of AI deepfakes, let me say that AI deepfakes are getting ready through 2026 to explode. Well, that's not only changed in the education that we're given. We got a ton of AI deepfake education that's now in our what we call the mod store. Not only are we publishing articles about it and awareness and that sort of thing, but it's even going to modify and change the, you know, the type of phishing, simulated phishing content you can do. So we certainly do listen to our customers. Like, you know, a lot of customers, there's been a big push for MFA. You got to use MFA. A lot of our content, most of our content, especially the end of the year stuff, the security awareness training things that people show annually, we include a lot of examples of how phishing, how social engineering can get around your multi-factor authentication method. You know, so, and we talk about that, or using password managers, or using phishing resistant multi-factor authentication, or FIDO, or passkeys, or something like that. So yeah, we are certainly listening to customers, and we're trying, and we do. We know that our customers that use our products more, not only do better security wise, but they remain our customers longer. And so there's a great big benefit in the cycle that we're helping people to better utilize our products, staying up to date with the latest, you know, social engineering and phishing scams are, and then being able to, you know, and helping them utilize it. If we see a customer that's not utilizing our product, we're typically reaching out pretty quickly.
Yeah, agreed. Because I think the other net benefit of doing that too is employee engagement in the programs themselves versus, you know, we've been through, and I've certainly have, is the click-through training. You know, you can get through the training in about 5 minutes if you just click yes and you take a quick quiz at the end. And okay, well, that's that year done. I get zero benefit, not learned anything. And the reason why I brought up the training and why the feedback coming through is not only is it following trends, but also the training itself is actually produced in such a way that is engaged, that I feel that taking a training actually increases the knowledge of the end user. One, that's fantastic. You know, we if we wanted to invest in a product, I would just record them myself and say, okay, here's 5 minutes of me talking. Here's security practice. Please do this for the organization. You're saving my job. And thank you very much. We'll talk to you again next year. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever because, one, we're not getting, and really going back to the behavioral engineering piece and the culture, I think is embracing both the fact that, one, we have a responsibility, every user accessing a system, accessing a resource from an organization's perspective has a responsibility. And then also that we're reinforcing that through, as you mentioned, a culture of continuous learning and really staying up to speed with the jousting, as it were. We'll go back to the title of the episode, that we're able to fight in the same fights and we're using the same tools, the same capabilities, the same approaches, which makes it a fair fight. Because in the past, Roger, I don't think it's been fair because we've been too slow, really, from an organization perspective to react. And we need the armory, as it were, of KnowBefore in order to level up respectfully.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And let me say, staying, you know, up to date on what the latest attacks are, very, very important, right? If you and I can remember, we've been doing this long enough where the fake antivirus was like a big one, right? So, you've been infected. And that still does occur, but it's not nearly as popular as some of the other, like the callback phishing, the voicemail phishing, that sort of stuff. And so you do have to stay relevant with the types of attacks and update your stuff. And I am proud. Our education team, it is not two or three people trying to figure out what to do. We literally have teams of PhDs. If their PhD is an online digital education, we survey our customers. We look at when people at the end of a lot of our stuff will say, how did you like this? Not only stars, but comments. And we take those comments and it literally becomes a part of what we do to update our training. And we always plan at the beginning of the year what we're going to do, what we're going to talk about. And no doubt every month or two or three, a new topic comes up and we're like, oh, we got to stick this in here. We got to make this content because the cyber criminals are not resting. They're, you know, continuing to come up with good ideas for scamming people. And again, you don't want the cyber criminal being the only one that's testing, you know, your employee with that particular type of scam.
Exactly. Exactly. Learning at the speed of attacker innovation, I think, is exactly where we need to be. Now, Roger, just to finish off the episode, I just wanted to, again, thank you for being part of this. And just to give a thought on where you see engagement in the future, both from a security training perspective and then where KnowBefore fits into that life cycle.
Well, I think two things that are kind of on the trend. One is more continuous training. CISA was, I think, the first I saw where they really talked about it a lot, saying once a year, we know for sure from the data, it does not work. You don't really see any substantial change to your training, at least training and testing at least once a quarter. We recommend at least once a month. CISA says continuous training, which just means kind of give the training, you know, when people need it, and, you know, just like you would with driver's ed or something like that. But the other thing too is certainly AI enabled and AI agents. We're seeing that you need to treat everybody is taught differently, and doing one size fit training doesn't fit. So in our product now, AI has been implemented with the agents where it actually looks at how did the person do. What type of simulated phishing do we want to do? How many times a year does it need to be done? If the person fails, or they click, maybe someone clicks on a link and someone doesn't click on a link, maybe someone provides credentials, someone doesn't. It ends up creating different training experiences and can be different based upon their risk score. Every person in the system has a risk score that can be based upon many things. And that risk score will change the type of training and simulated phishing that they get. And let me say, we know the AI, you always hear AI, but we've already got the data to show that the people that are using our AI, it's called ADA, AIDA agents, they actually send simulated phishing attacks that fool the recipients 2 to 3 times more than if a human admin selected the template. And we think that when someone, you always have people, oh, you can't fish me, you can't, well, when someone does get phished, we don't see it as a failure necessarily. We see it as another chance to give someone additional education where they might have a weakness, and that results in real risk reduction. So those are the things. You're going to see training, again, more training, hyper-personalized training for the person, for the role, based upon their security behaviors and how they did in other aspects, whatever's in what's called the risk score. So I think you're going to see that this very hyper-personalized training regime where an AI is going, hey, this is how I think we need to adjust ourselves to fit this person. Because you have some people, again, that never fail, some people that are failing everything. And someone that's failing all the time does need more consistent training than somebody that isn't as likely to click on something.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, Roger, again, it's been an absolute pleasure. What you're providing. And again, the feedback, and again, from a CISO advisory to a CISO, thank you. I've got some work to do. I'll get on it. And again, hopefully we can talk to you again in 2026. So all the best to you, your family, for the new year.
Thank you so much, and happy holidays to everybody.
Wonderful. And thank you to our audience. We appreciate you joining us today. Remember to subscribe with your preferred podcast provider. Make sure to subscribe on YouTube at The CI Security. Hit that like button, hit the notification bell. And with that, we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.